Hey everybody, this is Sam with just a quick reminder of what you were about to hear. This week we rediscovered some episodes that we never aired of Ask an Atheist, mostly recorded in 2015. To give us a little time to work on stuff around here, we're going to be editing and releasing those episodes, especially since there's some really interesting material that really should have been heard. This shortened episode was recorded on August 2nd, 2015, and Becky has titled it Norman Borlaug's Popcorn Balls. So we got somebody in the room who doesn't know what it's like when I'm actually really unstable, and he comes out with a pun. The worst pun I have ever heard. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with me, Sam Mulvey, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We are continuing our theme of shows because we're actually, I think at this point, we are currently on our way to South Dakota. Skeptic-Dakota. Yeah. So that may have been last week. I don't know. Whatever. But speaking of places east of here, I like these. I think you know I like this. The St. Paul Saints unaffiliated baseball team is teaming up with local atheist groups for a charity drive. The team is partnering with the Minnesota Atheists, Humanists of Minnesota, and Foundation Beyond Belief to throw Atheist Night. The team will change their usual jerseys from St. Paul Saints to Mr. Paul Aints, and all the S's on the logos will be covered. Are in the stadium. The logo's in the stadium. Da-da-da-da-da. Words. The groups are also asking fans to leave their souls at the door by and bringing a pair of shoes to donate to a local charity that fights poverty. The team's Aints jerseys will also be auctioned off after the game, with funds going to charity. And you could buy them. I bought one on eBay and think it's going to have my name on it.
Yay!
It's going to be so cool.
Puns are bad.
You've won wanted one of these for a really long time. I'm glad that you did it.
Yeah, they've been doing this for a long time. And and I was at the first time they did it, 2011, the first time we heard about it was like the third or fourth episode we were on the radio. And I'm like, hey, somebody give me one of those jerseys. And nothing.
Nothing.
You know, year after year after year, I guess they finally figured, hey, you know, we can make money off of this. I'm like, yes, you can. Yes.
Well, they cost like $66.06 or something like that.
$66.66.
Yeah.
And shipping was $6.66. It's for a charity, one I work for.
Yeah. So you're getting it back.
Yeah, kind of.
That's right. You're really just investing in your own future.
Yeah. A South African pastor was arrested for animal cruelty after he made his congregation eat live snakes and claimed they would turn to chocolate. Penuel Nyunyi. A self-proclaimed prophet was arrested after an animal rights group charged him with cruelty and was released on bail. That guy's church, End Times Disciples Ministries, posted photos of the incident on their Facebook account. They also posted photos of other incidents, such as said pastor riding congregants like horses and commanding snake spirits to enter them. What is it with snakes?
It's a really weird one to me, but honestly, okay, if you eat this snake, it will turn into chocolate. Now let's think objectively about transubstantiation. Is this really weirder? Eat this cracker, it'll turn into flesh.
Yeah.
Eat this wine, it'll turn into blood. Eat this snake, it'll turn into chocolate.
It's the wrong way.
I feel like there's a playground euphemism in there.
Yeah.
But
what you want is to eat this chocolate and have it turn into celery.
Right. Exactly. Because
sure.
No, fewer calories.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But still have the taste of chocolate.
Yeah, because I don't want to eat a live snake. You know, mm-hmm. cooked snake's pretty good, but a live one, no thank you.
Sure.
So it turns from something that's just, you know, because not much meat on a snake. And then it turns to chocolate, which is basically all fat.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're really kind of robbing yourself of the taste experience of chocolate.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is the point of chocolate. Like,
right.
And if it's about, and if it's about, you know, nutrition or something like that, stuff far more nutritious and better, you know, and more calorically dense than chocolate.
Yeah.
Sure. You can say, you eat a snake, turn into lard.
I mean, my first impression when I read this story is this guy has an obsession with getting snakes into people, clearly. What would Freud say?
Yeah.
Right?
What you put it out, is there a deeper meaning here?
Well, yeah. I mean, commanding snake spirits to enter them. Through which orifice?
Sometimes a gaboon viper is just a gaboon viper.
And the snakes go on. A Kentucky
going.
Man was killed after being bitten during a snake handling church service. John David Brock, whose name I have no trouble pronouncing, was holding a snake at a service at Mossy Simpson Pentecostal Church when he was bitten on the left arm. Brock refused medical treatment for the bite and instead chose to go to his brother's house, where he eventually died. Brock's church is located in Bell County, Kentucky, which is also where reality television preacher Jamie Coots was also killed by a snake bite during a service. What?
Surprise! Like, this should not be shocking to anybody.
Yeah, get bit by a snake. Bad things happen.
Yeah.
Especially when you refuse medical treatment.
Maybe handling snakes is just not the best expression of faith. It's just...
No.
I mean, what exactly are you proving? Let's say you do get bit by the snake, and God uses his magical powers to save you. Well... Now you've gone and distracted him from maybe like a kid with Ebola in Zimbabwe. Like, oh, great. I had to save this dumb jerk from his snake bite and got distracted so long that 9 kids died of malaria.
Yeah.
Way to go, guy. Thanks. Wasted my power once again.
Thanks to your holy snake endeavor, there's now another typhoon in the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. Good job.
Woot.
I don't really get this one. Is it because of the whole, everybody assumes that the serpent in the Garden of Eden is a snake, that they do all the snake handling?
There's
stuff?
A particular biblical verse that says you will handle snakes and drink poison and be unharmed.
Yeah.
And there's a whole string of churches. I don't even know if they're affiliated or not, but they're sort of an offshoot of baptism where they take this verse literally and, to prove their faith, literally handle snakes and drink poison. And, you know, try to be unharmed, but it seems like whenever they actually drink a large amount of actual poison or get bit by a seriously venomous snake, they're as harmed as anybody else.
Yeah.
So I guess their faith is not true and their hearts are impure or something like that.
I would like to point, you know, okay, I think it's silly, and there's a little bit of my personality that's like, that, you know, takes from Bill Hicks. Good. But no, I don't like this. So as a compromise to this particular religious community, I would like to point out that alcohol, technically a poison.
Yes.
Hey, yeah.
So we've got an email here. This is Sandy from Canada, who says, I've been reading a lot of apologist web content lately, and writers never fail to use the term new atheist. I think they are using it to somehow denigrate the movement, and this is becoming more obvious the older the new atheists get. Imagine if they did not use this terminology. Instead of saying Sam Harris, another of the new atheist breed, they would have to identify Sam by calling him a prominent or popular atheist. Instead of saying one of the main complaints of the new atheist, they'd have to say one of the key complaints of the resurgent atheist movement. Thoughts? Well, yeah.
I feel like if a group is going to be labeled, they should get to make up their own label.
In a perfect world, I'd really like that, but that's not often how it works out, is it?
Mm. Well, I mean, I understand the need to sort of separate from, like, the atheists of the past that didn't stand up for their rights, that didn't, like, really fight for their place at the table, and it's sort of separating out from the past atheist movements or lack of movements that they just sort of let the In God We Trust thing happen, and the various other things that they just sort of sat back and let happen. The new atheist movement is more of a, hey, no, we're here too.
Yeah.
We're growing. You need to give us a place to speak our minds.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the differentiation between, like, the new atheist movement and what has been done in the past as atheism.
Right. I think, yeah. You know, a lot of people have been saying, I've met a few people who like the concept of that it's a new atheism movement, because it suggests that there has been sort of a refresh and we're taking a more activist approach, which is definitely true.
It's definitely true.
But, you know, we're talking to people regularly on the show who have been activists going on 20, 30 years. I mean, it's not like Humanists of Washington was, American Humanist Association was created yesterday. It's a really old organization. Kurt Vonnegut was its president for a while. Isaac Asimov was its president once. I mean, Humanists of Washington itself was started in 1983. So
right.
it's not like this is a new thing. There have been atheists around for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, since probably before religion, really.
Yeah.
Well, I think sort of the internet gave us the opportunity to come into the spotlight in a much sort of broader sense, where we could bring our opinions to the forefront in sort of an anonymous way. And so there was, you know, less fear of like outing yourself as an atheist,
yeah,
or making real life enemies,
putting your life in danger.
Right. It's an easier thing to talk about and share ideas about now. And I think maybe that's sort of why it's the new atheism.
Yeah.
It's nice to sort of like own the internet as far as arguments come on forums.
Right, right.
Yeah.
There's good reasons about the internet and there's bad reasons about the internet. I mean, weird cult people find each other. On the other hand, we get to find each other. It's very information rich out there. But is there like any... Oh, it's like NPR. This is the thing, is when people use the word new atheist and they start talking like that, sometimes they're just trying to... Okay, very rarely, they're just trying to identify a group of people.
Right.
But this goes into something we've talked on the show called NPR ecumenicalism, which NPR really hates the new atheist. I don't know if you've noticed that, but their coverage of the movement over the last 20 years has been... not so grand, let's say. Mm. And they seem to have this thing where everybody should believe something. You know, we're all, you know, you're welcome as long as you believe in something weird, so that we're all equal.
Yeah.
And the idea that there's people who don't believe at all just seems to stick in their craw a little bit. And I was kind of, you know, why? Maybe I don't know. That's sort of a mystery to me.
There may be sort of an insecurity about beliefs, I guess.
Yeah, and it's not like we don't believe in anything. It's that we don't believe in supernatural things.
Yeah.
I believe in the people in this room. I believe in, like, the goodness of, like, the people that I surround myself with. Like, there are a lot of things that I do believe in. Maybe just not supernatural things.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Go to the break. When we come back, we're going to continue on with the emails.
Sorry.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Hello again. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And it occurs to me that maybe I should tell you who you're talking to today. I am Sam Mulvey. That's probably pretty obvious, I suppose, given the name of the show.
People should know who, know.
And yeah. It is actually, you mentioned that I forgot to introduce you guys, and that actually makes sense, because I have you guys been on the air together before?
Once before, yeah.
Okay, because it's Dan and Lombardo and Bridget Lombardo. And
like, that is correct.
That's a thing that happens.
We are a thing that happens, apparently.
We are a thing that happens. Yeah. We're an event in space-time.
Yeah. You are composed of matter. I have an email here, which is Gary from Florida, who writes, I recently realized that I was, in fact, an atheist. The thought of dying has always frightened me. The thought of life ending with no afterlife really freaks me out. Being unconscious, nothingness. What would you advise for a new atheist on this topic?
I would suggest that, you know, when you think about death, this is the only life you've got. You know, protect it as much as you can. But I think there's some comfort to be taken in death, and that... if there is no afterlife, then there is no suffering. You will not know that you are dead.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of ways to sort of keep your legacy going that sort of supersedes the concept of death. Things like doing good work and making yourself known. And even if you're making a difference in like a single person, that person will then tell stories of you and they will tell stories and so on and so forth. So just because your physical form is no longer here and you are no longer conscious, it is still, you are still continuing on in stories and the memories of the people around you. So that is even, I think, greater than the concept of an afterlife. So that's my personal take.
So much of human history has been filled with some bad stuff in it, or with a lot of bad stuff in it. And yeah, I'm using the word bad stuff to mean stuff like genocide and what have you.
Really bad things.
Yeah, I'm infantilizing a little bit because it's, you know, that's like, it's tired. But I can kind of see the appeal of an afterlife in that respect, is that you've had kind of a crap life, and then so your reward is coming afterwards, after the people who have harmed you can't touch you anymore. And I can kind of see that aspect of it. But as far as death itself goes, I always think of a quote from Mark Twain, which is, "I do not fear death. I had been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it."
Mm-hmm.
And that's I think that really put it in a context for me the first time I read that, because it was, yeah, it I'm not aware of the time that happened before I was born, so I'm likely not going to be aware of the time that happens after I die. That, you know, the self-annihilation thing doesn't really bother me. And I think this may be a distinction without a difference, and I kind of want to put this to you guys. It's not the self-annihilation that bothers me, because it can't bother me. I'm not.
Right.
Full stop. The rapidly diminishing amount of time I have is the thing that gets me. It's like, I'm going to be 40 soon. It's like, wow. Huh?
Yeah.
Me? 40? Really?
You know, if you just sit back and ponder your mortality, it's easy to get into sort of a spiral of depression and anxiety of, you know, hearing that the ultimate ticking of the universal clock.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
As seconds of your life are shed, you know, tick, tock, tick, tock. There goes another second of your life. It's shorter and shorter. You're closer to death. You're closer to death.
Okay, get it. Move on.
Didn't They Might Be Giants do a song about that?
I'm pretty sure they did.
Yeah, that's what he's quoting. Oh. It's still depressing me.
But for me, that's sort of a driver in my life to do things. And I think if I didn't have this sort of cosmic deadline, what value would I give to my own life? What could it possibly be worth if I knew that my time was not limited? Thankfully my time is limited,
right?
And it makes me want to come out and do things like this.
So you're thankful that your time is limited?
Yeah, at least as far as a motivating force goes. Maybe if that wasn't the primary one, I'd find another one.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to, you know, upload my consciousness into a robot body and have forever to explore the universe, that might be an equally compelling thing. But until that sort of technology becomes a reality, I have a lot of things that I would like to do before my time is up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's knowing that my time will be up that keeps me working at them.
Okay. That doesn't move me so much as all the stuff I do. Wow. Maybe I have OCD or something.
Really, Sam? Really? Wow.
No.
We're shocked.
I do these things not because I'm concerned for the future or because I want to, or because I'm afraid I want something to survive me. Like when I built this studio, or when I started Ask an Atheist, or I didn't do it because, like, I was like, oh, it's going to be this big edifice or whatever. I just feel, I like building. I like creating things. And I like, you know, I like doing stuff with my hands. And I like, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I mean, look around. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I want, and part of it is I want to experience as much as I can in the directions that I choose to go. And this is the direction that I've chosen to go, and I don't want it to end. The story, I love stories. I write stories, I read stories, love science fiction, and I don't want a story to end. But on the other hand, but that's it. It's like, that's the thing that bothers me. But the death part, the actual dying bit, 10 minutes, if I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Well, 10 minutes one way or the other, maybe.
Well,
it depends on how it goes.
Yeah.
The thing, too, about what you do in radio and what we do here is that radio waves, they continue. Like, the waves don't diminish. They continue.
Not ours.
Well.
Yeah, we're below the we're below the frequency for that. They bounce back.
Well.
Yeah, we are heating the earth.
But radio waves aren't the only.
Right.
Aren't the only things that you're sending out.
Exactly.
Fair point. Oh yeah, we talked about this before.
Yeah,
you should touch on that again. That was a good point.
So every action that you do, I mean, everything that you do as a person, is still occurring. You affect gravity. The planet pulls gravity on you, but you pull gravity on the planet back, and in fact, on every other object in the universe. As you move around this room, you are changing the effect that you will have billions of years from now on stars that are billions of light years away. A tiny and imperceptible effect, but an effect nonetheless. Everything that you do as a collection of mass is deflecting photons, protons, neutrons, neutrinos as they speed their way through the universe, and their velocities, their vectors are permanently changed. If you had not been there at that time, that vector would not have changed, and they're going to go careening off into the universe, flying away at the speed of light or near the speed of light, depending on which particle it is, and that it has a permanent and lasting effect on other things that will happen in the universe. The event that is you now is not an event that ends until the universe ends, and we don't even know if that's a possible thing yet. So, you know, you change the path of a photon now. It bounces off you and off your shiny forehead and back into space. And, you know, you could have a civilization looking at Earth 10 million light years away. And in 10 million years, they'll see your shiny forehead through their telescope, because the speed of light is, of course, limited. Your gravitational effect with sensitive enough equipment could be detected. The thing that is you here may have died millions of years in the past, but the event that is you is continuing through the rest of the universe. It's something to think about. If an alien civilization, say 70 million light years away, were looking at us now, they'd be seeing dinosaurs, because that's how long it took the photons to get to them. That's something worth thinking about when, you know, a friend has passed away. That it, for a civilization that is far away looking out, they're just seeing those events for the first time. That person is not yet dead. And in fact, will never be dead as far as the rest of the universe is concerned.
There's also two more aphorisms that that I like. I'm going Hallmark Channel here, because it's death. Come on. It's straight up hack all the way through, right? somebody told me once that happiness is not asking if you're happy. And I think that's not like you're not supposed to ask. It doesn't occur that you need to ask. And I think that's part of it is if you throw yourself into what you do completely, the future, you know, to build for the future, maybe, or to build for some goal that you like, eventually you're going to stop, look back, and you're seeing all the great stuff you're going to build, and that's going to be that'll be a comfort for you. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, repeat to yourself, it's just a show, you should really just relax. I mean, it's not, the first part may not be true, but Mystery Science Theater, of course. So we have another email. This is Mikey from Connecticut, who writes, science has not found any evidence that God exists, but it has also not found any evidence that God doesn't exist. Therefore, would it be just as much of a leap of faith to assert that there is no God as it would be to assert that there is? Wouldn't both claims be inconsistent with the scientific method? Asking whether God exists is not analogous to asking the condition of Schrodinger's cat. We cannot say that the cat is dead or alive until we observe it. In fact, we cannot claim the cat even exists at all until we open the box. Wouldn't God be a similar superposition until we have definitive evidence that proves one case or the other? Wouldn't this view be more scientifically sound? Well, first things first.
Pascal's wager.
Right, here we go.
Pascal's wager.
Now that we got that out of the
way. The Pascal's wager button.
There's a little... This feels like a quantum Pascal's wager. Or Pascal's quantum wager. A little bit. Kind of, yeah. Yeah.
So, the answer to this question is kind of a yes and no. In science, we have a concept that we call the null hypothesis. So let's say you're testing a medication and you want to know if it treats a certain illness. We have to start with the assumption that it does not. We start with the assumption that it has no effect. Mm-hmm. And the test is, does it have an effect? Once we've determined that it has an effect, we can say, does it have a beneficial effect? Does it have a beneficial effect on this illness, etc.? But you have to start from the position of the null hypothesis. So when we're talking about a thing like God that we have no evidence for, I don't know how you could possibly come up with evidence against it. Science doesn't really work that way. But what we don't have is evidence for. So there's no reason to assume that this claim is correct. And what we need is evidence that the claim is correct.
Right.
And we would start with, is the concept of a God possible within the laws of physics as we understand them? Could this be a thing? The laws of physics as we understand them points to no, with the possible exception of a God being an exceptionally powerful alien with advanced technology that looks like magic to us. No, we know that things have causes, including the universe.
I think there's also an assumption in this question that should be addressed is the epistemological thing. Which is, on Ask an Atheist, this is actually like the second episode we ever did of the show, mm-hmm. was that as a statement of knowledge, we are agnostic. There
yes.
is no evidence for, there is no evidence against. We are agnostic. As a statement of belief, we are atheists. We believe it's going to end up, we believe that the evidence points to the lack of a God, and that's the way we're going to live. But this whole superposition thing, that's also sort of a deist component. There's sort of a
right.
deism thing there. But also, I think I'm gonna disagree with you on one point. I think there is a way to prove that certain gods don't exist, because specifically the Christian God makes some testable claims that don't stand up to evidence. And so once testable claims fall by the wayside, you've kind of disproven
absolutely.
That.
And I'll yeah. agree with you on that one, on specific definitions of gods that make claims and have requirements and claim cause and effect, that if you pray for X, then Y will occur.
Yeah.
Yes, you can prove that this does not occur. And I think we have sort of soundly proven that this does not occur, that prayer has a similar effect to placebo, which is to say none detectable.
I think the previously mentioned snake handling incidents
yes.
are
considering that these allegedly faithful persons handling snakes did in fact die of snake bites, we can then extrapolate that a God who protects the faithful from snake poison does not exist.
Yeah.
That's a testable claim, and we can deal with that. And of course, you could run into the idea and say, well, maybe their faith was flawed or whatnot. But I think at that point, you're just kind of making excuses. Can we test whether or not God created the universe 6,000 years ago? Absolutely. We have tested that and we have found it false. That claim
right.
has been refuted. We know that the age of the universe is closer to 13.7 to 13.8 billion years. And every year, it seems like we're refining that number a little bit more.
Yeah, it moves back and forth depending on what we find. It's no longer, because I mean, in the 19th century, it was like, it's 6,000 years old. Sorry, it's 60,000 years old. Sorry, it's 60 million years old. Wait, it's
right.
a billion years old.
Yeah.
We don't know. Oh, wait, it's like 9 trillion years old. it's eternal. No, sorry, 13
right.
billion. Got it.
Yeah.
We know that humanity did not descend from two human beings. The,
yeah.
the anthropological, historical, paleontological, and genetic evidence does not support that at all. So we can roundly reject the idea of a God that created humans. And as we're going through this sort of claim by claim by claim, it becomes sort of a God of the gaps thing. We know that diseases are not caused by evil spirits or demons or the wrath of God. There is a simple cause and effect, or in some cases, an extremely complex cause and effect
mm-hmm.
that has to do with pathogens or genetic defects. Or, exposure to radiation or other noxious stimuli, and that these are the things that cause disease.
Yeah.
So I guess when it comes down to it, what concept of God do we need to disprove? Which one
yeah.
is going
which
to be the...
Which one are we talking about?
Yeah.
I do want to say that I like Mikey's email. If I give the impression that I don't like it, I actually do. It makes a very... When we get a lot of these, they're always, like, really vague and you're not sure where they're going. This one makes a very clear statement and
absolutely.
It makes it a lot more fun to talk about. So thanks a bunch, Mikey. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Go to a break, and then we're going to continue answering listener emails.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back! Again! You like the polka one, don't you?
It's the best.
I really do. The it's my favorite part.
Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. So, we have another email, and, well, we're kind of hitting all the perennial topics today, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's good to drag them out every now and then. Yeah. This is Tisa from New York, who writes, "When I was a kid, I believed in Santa. People always say there is no harm in telling kids there's a Santa." Bullocks. I'm pronouncing that wrong. "Day after Christmas, I was 8 maybe, I found Santa's shopping list in my mom's handwriting. I was devastated. I begged my mom to tell me if Santa was real, and she just poo-pooed it like it was no big deal and kept up sort of half-hearted yeses and tried to drop the subject. Learning that my mother lied to me and then not getting answered when I begged for the reasons why adults, the stores, and the television keep this lie going hurt a lot. I don't remember much from my childhood, but I remember my heart dropping and the pain of learning Santa wasn't real. It is morally wrong to perpetuate the Santa lie. If the kid knows it's pretend fun, then it's okay. But I would never lead my kid on to think that Santa is real. Even when I was 12 to 18, helping my mom raise my toddler brothers, I would not let my brothers think Santa was real. I did not want them hurt the way I was."
I totally agree.
Dang.
Yeah. No, like the idea of Santa is... I think it's used with children to sort of teach them the larger concepts of, well, essentially lies, like the concept of truth and justice and Jesus and things like that. So when they do come across as, and they're discovered to be lies, it is traumatizing to a child.
Could you be a little bit more specific on truth and justice being lies?
Well, I mean, there's no like real, like when you break down, there is no truth particle or justice particle. There is like,
does the universe right. have inherent truth it, or
right.
justice?
Yeah. They're not real. Like they're hydrogen not, is real.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Much like the concept of Jesus. I can say that here, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can.
I could say that. I'm not in like work or something. So when you do have that concept, I mean, that's sort of the idea of having the Santa and Easter Bunny and stuff like that is sort of perpetuating the concept of supernatural things. And when you find them to be not true, that is actually a big reason. One of the big things that sort of made me question my faith when I was a young child was like, well, if I've been told that Santa and the Easter Bunny are real and they're not, well, what about Jesus? Like, what about all of these other things that are not necessarily tangible things that I've been told are true? So it is a good sort of learning experience to build atheists. But as far as like how to deal with the whole Santa thing, because it is something that people hold dear to, I wouldn't just not teach my kid that about Santa. My brother and his wife, they do it very well with my niece. She's 6, and they have always taught her that Santa is a fun story, it's a game, and we don't want to ruin the game for other people. And when she was an infant and my brother was telling us, you know, it was about the holiday season and they're like, no, we're not doing Santa, we're not doing any of this stuff, I was like, you know, you're raising an atheist, right? Because you're not teaching them this like larger concept of supernatural. And he's like, I'm okay with that.
So let me it seems like you're making a very specific claim about the Santa myth. By the way, Santa's not real. That the being taught about Santa and like the Easter Bunny and all that stuff is a sort of early indoctrination into the into believing in other mythologies and in the cognitive dissonance that they require.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's how I've always perceived it, and I don't have any like actual studies to support it, but I know that I've definitely read a handful of them when I was studying education and
so
stuff like
anecdotal,
that.
But really compelling anecdotal.
Yeah,
okay, I can get that. Yeah, well, that's yeah. really compelling anecdotal. Anecdotal is what leads to not anecdotal.
It's right.
Like, hey, check that out.
I know that there's definitely been studies on like kids that were taught about Santa and their religious beliefs and kids that were not taught or discovered that Santa wasn't real at a very young age and their religious beliefs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
There is a I haven't dragged this one in a while. And actually, I haven't really talked about this on the show. I talked about it in Living After Faith, which was there's sort of a religious detente in my house. My dad was a freethinker. My mom was a Lutheran. And they made it I think it was the only really decision they ever made about child rearing is that I would not regularly go to church. I would not be explicitly told I was a Christian. But I would go to vacation Bible college.
Hmm.
I think I got a vacation Bible college with really bad dates. And it never really hit me that I was supposed to be religious until I was like 10 or 12 or 13 or something. And so I read, I guess I'm religious. I'll read the Bible. I'm not religious anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is crap. And my mom was like, look, our son is reading the Bible. And I'm like, you're not going to like this. But I discovered pretty early that Santa wasn't real because of my dad. And my family communicates mostly through subtext and euphemism. And
Christmas dinner must be a blast.
Actually, you ask Becky. It's fantastic. Because what we're actually saying is trying to be funny. So the actual meaning of what we mean to each other is all communicated through subtext and euphemism. So it's, you know, we're all trying to outdo each other on jokes or something.
Imagine a school bus full of geckos is please pass the potatoes.
Pretty much. Yeah, I'd tell you the canonical story about that, but we're on the air.
Sure.
I've heard it. It's good.
Yeah, and so mom would make a big deal about Santa. You know, she's like, oh yeah, Santa got you this thing. Santa got you your Legos and your Game Boy and your whatever. And my dad would and my dad would be there, and she'd try to get dad to play. And he'd go, yeah. Santa got you those. Just that little pause. Yeah. Did you thank Santa? I'm like, oh. I said not a thing.
In my family, the actual like presents that were exchanged at Christmas were, you know, to this person and from this person. But anything that was in the stockings was from Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you got something really cool or extravagant in your stocking, like, you know, a watch or something like that, you'd look around the room and go, thank you, Santa. Knowing, you know, which actually, family member actually got it for you. But it was sort of like Bridget's brother, my brother-in-law, is doing, where it's like, this is the Santa game.
Yeah.
We all play along because it's fun.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I guess the Santa story for me was indoctrinating me into not trusting people.
Yeah.
and very close reading of what people say. I suppose.
Absolutely.
Maybe that's how I should do it. we do the same thing, except the stockings are filled with a really, really unhealthy food that we
yes.
all love. So my
dollar
bag,
store knickknacks.
That's the majority of the stocking. And then there's like one thing that might be a little more expensive.
My bag, almost entirely filled with lemon heads.
Nice.
My favorite candy. Honestly, it might be kind of academic for me, not because of the children thing, but because of I don't know that Christmas is going to be the holiday here.
No?
Hanukkah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no intention. I hate Christmas.
Yeah.
I'm going to celebrate the crap out of Thanksgiving, but Christmas can whatever. I don't care about it.
Yeah.
And so maybe Hanukkah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm game.
Sure.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
She's got cool Hanukkah stuff from when she was a kid.
I love her menorahs. Like, man, they're...
The shoe menorah?
I think the one that I like are like the children, the little...
Yeah,
like
with their shoes.
Is that the shoes?
Or is it
yeah.
The, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty cool one.
Yeah.
You put the oil in their shoes?
Or candles?
It's the candles.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's got mm-hmm. another one with that uses oil that we always put Thanksgiving turkey oil in. So it makes the house
oh, it smells so good.
On fire.
Yeah. Wish I still had the turkey.
Yeah. That would make me hungry.
Yeah, yes.
We thought there was
exactly
only enough deep frying oil to fry three turkeys, but it turned out there was enough for eight.
We thought there was only 5 gallons. There was 12. Oh, man. And yeah, so I kind of fought with that a long time before I, you know, realized my life was going to take the path it went. Yeah. Whether or not I'd do the Santa thing. Because, yeah, I don't... To what end?
Yeah.
Is what it comes down to. If it's false humility, if it's, or actual humility, like you don't want your kids like going, oh my God, my parents are the greatest because they just want them to have things. There's better ways you could do that. There's ways you could engineer it that don't leave them with lies.
What if the gifts were from dead scientists whose life work had somehow contributed to this gift? You know, here we got you this radio. You know, Merry Christmas to Jane from Nikola Tesla.
You're that guy.
He is that guy. Of course you know he's
no,
that guy.
No, I'm trying to figure out the way, like the fun thing. It's like, no, it also has to be educational. Can we just have fun?
We got you a big thing of popcorn balls from Norman Borlaug. Actually, I think he's still alive. But
he's still alive, yeah. So you may actually get popcorn balls from Norman Borlaug.
Please
should call him.
Norman Borlaug. Please send me popcorn balls.
Yeah.
You're the greatest.
That would be awesome.
My brain would melt.
Right? If I got popcorn balls in the mail from Norman Borlaug, that would be like the second happiest day of my life.
I would, you know, it's
and still, I only say that because my wife's in the room.
It'd still be a lie, but, Shelley Siegel's going to be here later in the month, so.
Oh, okay.
That's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what I might do is just like have presents appear and where'd the presents come from? I don't know.
What? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, open them. Find out.
The other thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all the time we got.
All the time.
This is Ask an Atheist. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Tweet us at askanatheistwa. Go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Give us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Bridget. I think this is the last actual episode we're recording. Wow. Next week, I'm pretty sure we're airing the South Dakota episode, and then we're back.
It's over.
See you guys next week.